fire last year was quite...
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
The Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Global Focus with guest Steve Bassett, Executive Director of the Paradigm Research Group, website paradigmresearchgroup.org. Tonight's discussion will center on the latest developments on the disclosure initiatives. Welcome to a Global Focus, everyone. Trish Sheridan speaking. Tonight's program features as guest Steve Bassett. A Global Focus airs live on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network with anchor station now, UPRN 109.7 FM New Orleans. And thanks to Joe Montaldo, owner of the Paranormal Radio Network, for making these programs possible. Appreciate it. Well, tonight's guest, Steve Bassett, is an exopolitical activist and a leading advocate for ending the 65-year government-imposed truth embargo regarding an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. He is the executive director of the Paradigm Research Group, and his advocacy work has been extensively covered by national and international media. He has spoken to audiences all over the world about the implications of formal disclosure of the ET presence. Steve, welcome to the program. I first want to thank you for your excellent efforts on disclosure advocacy. There now is another important petition that's been submitted, and I'm sure you'll want to discuss the details. And that new petition, Disclosure Petition 3, is right up now at the Washington, at the White House government petition website.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Patrice, as always. Well, for the last 5 months, we've had some fun and had some impact using a project called We the People, which the White House initiated on its own back in September. An interesting concept, anyone can submit a petition and get some signatures. If you get enough signatures in 30 days, the White House will actually respond to the issue that you represented. Well and good. So it was PRG's job to make sure there was a representative petition up there regarding the disclosure issue, because that's obviously what it does. It's advocating for the end of the truth embargo and the formal acknowledgement that we're not alone in the universe from our own government. And we jumped on it real quick. In the beginning, the number of signatures required was only about 5,000. We got those right away. We got a response from the U.S. government, from the White House, on the 4th of November, the first time the White House has ever put a response out on the ET issue in writing, and attracted a lot of media attention. A couple hundred articles around the world, at least. A lot of those are can be seen, reviewed at the petition's home base, I guess you could say, disclosurepetition.info, disclosurepetition.info. So all well and good, and so we continued to pursue it with a second disclosure petition that was put up on December the 1st and so forth. These things are never straightforward. What happened is that the White House has not promoted this project that much. Certainly it's up on the White House website. You can easily find it. The link is always right there, and the White House website gets a lot of traffic. But they haven't really gone, you know, and put out some releases. They haven't really pressed the media to cover it, and the president has never mentioned it. So they really under-promoted it. Nevertheless, there was a great deal of interest initially. Based on news articles that I have reviewed, they got, I think, around maybe 15,000 petitions submitted in the first 60 days, covering all manner of issues. You can imagine, just about any issue you can imagine, there was a petition up there. And a lot of signatures, by and large. They picked up a couple main signatures in their first 90 days. All well and good, but about 3 weeks into the process, actually about 7 days after the first disclosure petition cleared the threshold to get a response, they increased the threshold to 25,000. They increased it fivefold, from 5,000 to 25,000. Well, the effect of this was to dramatically drop the interest in this project. In the last 60 days, a fraction of the number of petitions submitted in the first 60 days were probably submitted. There's only 58 active petitions up there now at We the People. They've now responded to about the same 58. In the first 4 or 5 weeks, I think there were 400 petitions. It must have gone through there just very quickly. So the number of people going up to the site, the number of people filing petitions, the number of people promoting that project, because they have to, has fallen off. And so overall, this excellent idea is being sort of allowed to dry up, which is too bad. And so the second petition that we submitted in December did not get 25,000. And this was the petition involving the Rockefeller Initiative. But it got worse because the site stopped working well. We the People, which is, again, a White House website, was just not working. And we were getting complaints from all over regarding the inability to sign the petition to open accounts and what have you. In fact, at disclosurepetition.info, you can actually go see 100 or so of these complaints, emails, without the names deleted, of course, and the email addresses deleted. But you can see these complaints. And so that was driving people crazy. And so, for whatever reason, let's just say that the ability to use this project that the White House created to put extremely important issues in front of the White House and put them in a position where they would have to respond was kind of eliminated. It was just not possible. So we did resubmit the Rockefeller petition, Rockefeller Initiative petition. On the 3rd, we got about 7,000 signatures. And it was then pulled off the White House site on March 24. And then we just put up a third petition. But let me just say this. Here's where we're at. We've still gotten a lot of benefit from this, Patrice. First and foremost, for the last 5 months, there have been petitions up on the White House website drawing attention to the ET disclosure issue. The one that was responded to, the initial petition, disclosure petition one, is still up there because it got a response. And so in the response section is the response from the White House plus the petition and the signatures that it got, like 12,000. And it remains there still. It'll probably remain up there as long as that project continues. And so once again, this issue is up on the White House website. And then the second petition was up a total of 60 days. That's the Rockefeller Initiative. And then as of a couple days ago, March 25, I think, Disclosure Petition 3 was submitted. And this is a challenging one, too. Now, again, there's no expectation that it will get 25,000 signatures. However, it is up on the White House website for anybody in the world to see. So let me read this. Let me read this to your audience, Patrice. The third disclosure petition reads as follows. We petition the Obama administration to ask Defense Secretary Panetta to respond to mounting evidence of nuclear weapons tampering by extraterrestrial craft. Disclosure Petition 3, Nuclear Weapons Tampering by ParadigmResearchGroup.org. Since 1991, government witnesses of high rank have come forward with evidence regarding incidents when extraordinary craft of unknown origin tampered with nuclear weapons facilities around the world. Despite extensive media coverage of these emerging testimonies since the fall of 2010, the Obama administration has made no comment whatsoever regarding this evidence and the national security implications. Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta, who was chief of staff to President Clinton during the Rockefeller Initiative, when Rockefeller tried to get Clinton to be the disclosure president, basically, should respond to these testimonies. Research source, and there's a link directly to the key research source on this. Then there is a link to the coverage of a press conference held in 2010 regarding the nuclear tampering issue where former Air Force officers who had high security clearances came forward to talk about multiple issues. And then there's also a link to the Rockefeller Initiative. This sits up at the White House website right now. So once again, here we go, right, round three, and same old, same old. The truth embargo is still in place. Why do we know that? Because anybody tampers with nuclear weapons. Let me put it this way. If some homegrown terrorist or some member of the U.S. military were to pull some tampering stunt with nuclear weapons and the press got a hold of it, it would be a massive story. And furthermore, the White House and the Defense Department would be all over it. Here we have a situation where because the tampering is done by unidentified craft of unknown origin, even though it's being reported by Air Force officers and SAC base launch commanders, because of the truth embargo, they cannot speak to it like it didn't happen. And so this press conference was held. There was a couple of hundred, this was at the National Press Club, a couple of hundred articles were written around the world about it, which I'll give the media credit for. Though they didn't follow up, they didn't go and ask the Pentagon anything, they didn't challenge the president or bring it up in the White House briefing room. But nevertheless, they covered it, and then the White House just pretends, well, maybe some unknown craft are tampering with our weapons. That's not a big deal. No security issue there. So once again, the absurdity of this, the extraordinary disconnect between the government and the people's right to know is just laid bare. And so the DRG has just put that particular issue right there on the White House website. And after this petition is finished in about another 25 days, it's got another one ready to go.
Now, Steve, you've posted the Paradigm Research Group website at ParadigmResearchGroup.org, the video of that historic conference on September 27th, 2010, held at the Washington, D.C. Press Club.
Right.
Again, I was today re-listening to the testimony on that video, and I'm awed by the high credentials, clearances of the witnesses, also their testimony details as to sighting venues, types of craft observed, and other precise descriptions. It's really an awesome video, and to me it's a must for those who wish to know the extent and seriousness of the UFO ET presence. It's quite the evidentiary video.
Yes, indeed. In fact, I just wrote an article in, I need to get a link up on that, actually, in examiner.com. If your readers go to examiner.com and do a search on Stephen Bassett, they'll get my latest article on this. I'm going to bring it up right now, where I essentially elaborate on this further and give a sense of exactly what that press conference was about. Now, let me mention that that press conference was produced and put on by researcher Robert Hastings and Air Force officer and witness Captain Robert Salas. And they did a tremendous job. Now, Hastings is a lead here. He is the foremost researcher in the world on the issue of nuclear weapons tampering, or UFO, ET, and nukes, which is a non-trivial subject, trust me. It's not some sidebar. It has been a factor since this phenomena emerges in 1947. A lot of people know about Roswell, but some of them don't know that, of course, at the time, Roswell was the only nuclear air force base, or, well, air base in the world. It is from there that was involved, obviously, the nuclear bombing of Japan. And it just goes on from there, right? So, when it comes to nuclear weapons, most Americans, I think, would accept the fact that that's pretty important stuff. That's national security, pretty high level, right? And so the idea that something like that could be going on and the government has nothing to say about it, doesn't respond to important witnesses, particularly Air Force men, is just another example of how much this truth embargo has become a liability and an embarrassment to the government. The people that were involved in that press conference included Lieutenant Colonel Dwayne Arneson, U.S. Air Force retired, Captain Bruce Fenstermacher, U.S. Air Force retired, Colonel Charles Holt, U.S. Air Force retired, Captain Robert Jameson, U.S. Air Force retired, Patrick McDonough, who was an enlisted man, First Lieutenant Jerome Nelson, now no longer with the U.S. Air Force, and then Captain Robert Salas, U.S. Air Force retired. All of them had security clearances. A number of them had high-level security clearances. Salas, of course, was a launch base commander. He was commander of the silos where they launched the missiles. He was the one that would have had to turn the key if a nuclear war had begun at the time of the incident that he came forward about, the Malmstrom Air Force Base incident, right, of 1967. So this is the quality of the people that are coming forward that had distinguished careers, and coming forward in conjunction, of course, with Robert Hastings' work, which is showing many of these instances going back all 60 years and up until recent times. And the press covers it. They write their article, which if they didn't cover it at all would be kind of a red flag, and that's it. They don't go to the Defense Department and say, what is your response to this? They don't go to the Air Force. They don't go to the CIA. They don't bring the question up in the White House briefing room to James Carney. They just, well, that's it. You know, we really can't go further than that because this is about ET. It's clearly unidentified craft or probably ET vehicles. That's UFOs. That's ET. We can't go there. So the tampering of missiles, we'll just stop there. And that sort of gives the impression to the public, well, it's probably not a big deal. It was all a misunderstanding. Right, or something like that. So this is not the way to run the United States. And the people really don't want this, but they really don't know what to do about it. So this press conference, while it had, you know, the impact was limited in the sense that after a certain amount of time, it just faded out. Of course, thanks to the Internet, the YouTube of it, and you can easily find it on YouTube, just do a search on UFOs and nukes. You can find several renditions and shorter versions and what have you. of course, it happened, and it's never going to be, it's not going to be possible to pretend it didn't happen, and of course, the record is right there on the internet. So this is a great, important event, a very great service, and what PRG has done is try to bring it back to life, and put it back in play by putting it right there on the White House website. Now, will any reporters go to and read that and go, wow, and then go read the testimonies? Will they go and read some of the articles from before? Will it bother them that the Secretary of Defense Gates and now Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta have never addressed this? Like, what's there to say? You know, what's there to respond to? It's just some Air Force officers with security clearance saying that unidentified craft have tampered with their nuclear weapons. Nothing to respond to there. This might say, wait a minute, isn't it time that we started asking these questions? So that's what's happening. And the next petition will go up in due course. I think there's another one up there right now. There's a couple of EP-based petitions up there now.
And you're and, just past that initial 150 petition signature requirement.
Yeah.
Pardon the interruption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's up to 500. So it was up pretty quickly. Yes. My network is strong enough. I can get 150 signatures just like that.
Mm-hmm.
But people are a little fatigued. They're irritated by the fact that the site doesn't work well, which I think is intentional. I don't think this is an accident. And they're a little burned out. And the number of people that can sign a petition is based on the number of people that know about it. It's not the number of people in the country. It's the number of people that know it's up there at all.
Yes.
And so unless the White House is going to promote this We the People project more aggressively, or we had the kind of money that we could put up billboards or ads in newspapers or what have you, we're limited in how much traffic we can drive there that's aware that there's a petition there that they could sign. So they've got this thing kind of contained. They're having to respond to very few petitions now. There's only about 58 of it all. Most of them will never make the 25. And so they get credit for this participatory democracy, but they don't have to do a lot of work. This is cynical. I don't like it. It's a mistake. But, hey, it's better than nothing.
Well, those are powerful comments. You know, Steve, as well, am I correct that this September 27th, 2010 conference was only open to members of the media and members of Congress and their staff?
It was a press conference that was private. In other words, they just didn't let anybody in. It's not known whether congressional staffers were there. You'd have to probably contact Robert Hastings on that. He would know.
Mm-hmm.
I'll check myself and see if I can find out. Probably not. There was some decent coverage. But this is also the event that's famous because the Washington Post, which is so completely compromised on the ET issue, it's sad. I mean, just utterly compromised on this issue. Even though, again, there was a lot of what I call respectful and appropriate coverage, and you can see that if you go to disclosurepetition.info.
Yes.
Or if you go to the petition itself, you'll see the link. You get the link to the coverage. It's up at the Paradigm Research Group website. The Washington Post sent their city columnist guy, a guy named Kelly, who wrote a humor piece on it.
Mm-hmm.
He basically wrote a humor piece on this. These are Air Force officers who were retired, who had high security clearances, colonels, captains, and Yes.
Lee Spiegel mentioned that, and just very quickly, Robert Morningstar in his article described these men, and I'm not going to repeat their names, though the name is next to each title. One fellow was a U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, retired Lieutenant Colonel, Communications Center officer in charge. Next guy, they actually had three former United States Air Force nuclear missile launch officers. They had a former deputy base commander, that would be retired Colonel Charles Halt. They had Robert Hastings, researcher, author. They also had a nuclear missile site geodetic surveyor. Who else now?
These are the people I mentioned earlier. I didn't mention their roles, which you're describing now. But that's the people. These are unimpeachable people. So that was the only coverage of the Washington Post. Now this is a disgrace.
Yes, it is.
Absolute and total disgrace. This is not any paper. This is the Washington Post, right? It's supposedly the political paper of record. And so They will, and there is a number of pieces on the net chiding them and taking them to the woodshed over this. They don't care. But they will eventually have to answer for this. And history is not going to be very, very kind to the Washington Post. It's going to be very tough on it. Incredibly embarrassing. I don't know if they'll ever apologize. But they have been in bed with this truth embargo absolutely since the beginning, going back to the very beginning. They occasionally do an article. Once in a while, something slips through that has a little substance to it. But overall, they have basically said, look, we're in bed with the government on this. We're not going to challenge the truth embargo. We're not going to do anything until the government tells us we can. Or they're incompetent. So incompetent that they're unable to know what's going on around them. They don't check. They don't do the research. They're not aware of the witnesses coming forward. They're just completely incompetent. It's one or the other. Either way, it's not good for the Washington Post. New York Times, of course, has also not been on this, but New York Times is up in New York. I mean, the Washington Post is in Washington, D.C. They're supposedly the paper that covers, you know, what goes on in the country, and they pride themselves on having done this so well. They pride themselves. You know, the Washington Post put a couple of investigative reporters on the Watergate issue, and along with the New York Times, ended up breaking that out and bringing down Nixon. And they have been basically riding on that, dining out on that event ever since. They haven't done anything, I think, of that magnitude since. And overall, their budgets are dropping, investigative reporters dropping, they're just fading away, like most newspapers. But that's it. And they think they're the great investigative paper because they did that. That was 40 years ago, right? That was a long time ago. So, but this issue is a perfect example. They just totally, you know, I look forward to talking about it once disclosure has taken place. That's one of the things I want to relish, particularly, is talking about the role of newspapers, particularly the Post, in the pre-disclosure world. But obviously, I'll be having these chats in the post-disclosure world.
No, thanks for those comments, Steve. You know, I also appreciate your links there at the bottom of the text petition, including that summary from Robert Hastings' site. It's a page about UFOs and nuclear weapons. And just to mention here, he is referencing even a rather recent base event. I'm not naming the Western base, but that is reported as having occurred June 2011. And also, I remember that Hastings, when asked in the conference about ongoing incidents, mentioned that he thought the incidences were the tip of the iceberg. That's an on, and I believe I would say, not paraphrasing,
I think
too much,
that's a good
ongoing
thing.
Situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would probably agree with him. He's obviously, we're limited to only those events where witnesses have come forward. Now, you know, Bob Salas broke the ice on this, and he was the one that really came forward to speak to one of these incidents, the Malmstrom case. And obviously, he was the launch commander. So, but let me tell you, right, I mean, he's fully retired, but I'm sure that there was risk involved in him doing that. I don't think that his post Air Force life was going to be in doing this. He did come forward at a time when I think real harassment had dropped off. So had he done what he had done 8 or 9 years earlier, I think he'd have been in serious hot water. But nevertheless, the point is that we only know about those incidents where witnesses have come forward. And by and large, the vast majority of people that served with security clearances at the level required to work in the nuke weapons area, they're pretty much committed, they have made the choice that they will never speak of any of these things because they've been told not to, and they had whatever security oaths they signed. And it varies. It's not the same for everyone. And they just take it to the grave, though they may say a few things to their kids. I mean, I've got people all the time. I mean, running into people all the time. They're telling me about what their father told them, you know, or what their grandfather told them. But that's as far as it goes. I mean, this is a private point they're making to me. They're not publicizing it. And their father, grandfather, again, went to the grave without ever going public. The vast majority do that. So how many incidents were there? We don't know. But I think it is the tip of the iceberg, and I think it's extremely important that we get this out because the people, besides needing to know they're not alone in the universe, really need to figure out or know as much as possible as to that these events have taken place and then address why they have taken place. In other words, why are they tampering with our nukes? As I think the answer to that question, whatever it is extremely significant to what's coming and how things may work out and what's important and what's not important. So this is extremely heavy stuff. And so, you know, this could have been the first petition, but this is more complicated, difficult stuff. The first disclosure petition was simply calling for the administration to end the truth embargo, release all UFO files, and acknowledge the extraterrestrial presence. Very straightforward. And it was the right one. And it got the 5,000 signatures it needed very quickly. And again, we got a response. So these other petitions are much more difficult. And with the drop-off in activity, again, we're not going to be seeing enough response to these petitions unless something dramatic happens.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Steve, I have to rephrase something here. I do remember Hastings did use that phrase, tip of the iceberg, as far as the number of the incidents.
Mm-hmm.
Now, come to think of it, I didn't complete hearing the video. I will complete it tonight. I'm not sure if he can... believes that these incidents are ongoing. I know they have compiled the reports of many servicemen who have seen these unusual sightings, very dramatic, I think very important. And at this point, could we mention the reporting of Billy Cox? He received a 2005 award for courage in journalism from the Paradigm Research Group. He's written excellent material on this, including an article in the Herald Tribune from January 2011, also from June 15th, 2011. And you know, in the June 15th article, there was one paragraph that really floored me. It involved relates to the fact that one of the military, a serviceman who had not been above ground to see the craft approaching of those sites, was a sort of a born skeptic. But if I could just quote him here, in defense of Salas, Hastings has posted a recorded interview with Salas's colleague, retired Colonel Fred Maywald. Both officers were on Oscar Flight's launch control facility at Malmstrom when more than half a dozen Minutemen went off the grid on March 24th, 1967. Although neither saw the UFO from their underground consoles, Maywald confirmed Salas' story that topside security reported, subquote, a bright red oval-shaped object, end quote, hovering over the fence gate, quote. Really interesting article.
Yeah, well, obviously the people upside saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were by and large enlisted. Right? The officers were down in the silo. And I could be wrong here, but they have not come forward. In other words, and I'm not surprised, because again, yeah, it's one thing to be a retired officer, but if you were an enlisted guy and you left the service after a couple of years and you're off in another job, you got a wife, you got kids, coming forward is not going to be easy. If you're an officer retired with a reasonably good pension, a little easier. But there were plenty of people up there that saw it that night, and eventually they will come forward, right, in case the wondering if this is all just going to blow over. And by the way, to get back to something else you said, I was at that press conference in September of 2010, and Hastings did, in fact, indicate that he believes that this stuff is ongoing, and there have been recent events, and he is still getting information. And he is the center. He's at the center of the storm on this particular subject, nukes and UFOs and nuke tampering. And I'm sure that he has a number of contacts that he hasn't developed to the point where he can write about it, but are there. So I, when this embargo was over, probably not before, is that the nuclear issue was one of the key reasons why suddenly ETs were becoming extremely overt, or much more overt, in their conduct starting in early 1947 and forward. that there is, that the nuke issue is one of the reasons why that what is going on is going on. That doesn't mean there hasn't been things going on in the past, but the particular nature of the engagement of the human race by ETs is very much connected to this nuclear thing. And it's easy to theorize on this. And it doesn't mean we know for sure. We don't. Only the ETs know for sure. But it's easy to come up with theories as to why they would be concerned or they would be engaging us because of the fact that in 1945 we exploded our two nuclear weapons and we exploded 2,000 since then. And at some point we had 75,000. And it was pretty well understood by 1985 that if we had an all-out nuclear war with full missile exchanges, it would essentially destroy the planet. It would destroy the biosphere in a sense that large animals would not be able to survive, and the human race would be reduced to a very limited number. The end of the whole ball game, right? I mean, the stupidity and inability to deal with its primal natures is not a trivial thing. And if you look at the world and the species from the bigger picture, from the perspective of, say, the ETs, starting in 1945, we really got ourselves into serious trouble. And we're not out of it yet. So this question, it cuts to the heart of exopolitics, the political social reasons for this, from the ET standpoint and also how we're dealing with it. So it's heavy, heavy-duty stuff. However, the petition on the White House website is based on national security only. It's like, how is it conceivable that you don't respond when honorable Air Force officers retired with high clearances tell you that unidentified craft, very much like the craft that are being seen and reported in the ET phenomena, tampered with our weapons? And the answer is, well, we can't because there's a truth embargo. And you don't have a right to know yet. I mean, that's basically the answer they never give. Not to mention, and then the other thing that's wonderful about this, but I don't know how many press will make the connection, is remember in their response to the first decision from the White House, which if you go to the We the People, you can find it, or you can link over to it from disclosurepetition.info. You have to muck around there a little bit, you'll find the links. The White House said that in its estimable opinion, there is no evidence at all of any life outside the planet, any engagement of the planet by non-human intelligence, or that the government has hidden anything on this. This is an extraordinary statement. Well, this petition addresses some very profound evidence that was put right in front of their nose, you know, a good 12 years ago, re-put in front of their nose at the National Press Club, September of 2010. This is the evidence they say doesn't exist. So again, we're going to continue to pound this concept of the absurdity of all this to the press until the press finally can't stand it any longer, and they finally decide, gee, we're journalists, why don't we act like journalists instead of, you know, this isn't the Soviet Union, and we're not the state-sponsored press whose job is it to simply lie to the people in order to maintain the state authority. Our job is to be journalists, and we have this wonderful opportunity to break great stories and make great money, so why don't we just do our job and investigating and asking the right questions. I mean, this is what the purpose is behind the advocacy movement in general, and certainly these petitions.
Very well said. And two comments on this. I note, and both of these articles by Billy Cox can be referenced at your Paradigm Research Group org site. Now, the one from January 21st, 2011, by Billy, entitled UFOs Digging Our Nukes Is Not News, end quote, has a great first paragraph, and I'll read it very quickly. Quote, a few weeks ago, Frank Warren, who runs a website out of Sacramento called the UFO Chronicles, interviewed another retired USAF, United States Air Force officer, with a national security secret. This guy was on launch control duty at a Midwestern nuclear missile silo in the 60s when a UFO buzzed the bunker he was assigned to and scared the spit out of topside security, end quote. And you can read the all the details at this particular article, which is available at the ParadigmResearchGroup.org article site there, January 21st, 2011, by Billy Cox. And my second question is, or just second comment, you know, at the International UFO Conference here, 2012, we had some major testimony, and I'm trying to bring this up here. It was a South American general who gave quite an interesting address, both in English and in Spanish. Let me see here. Oh, heavens. I'm going to find it. The speakers.
Chile, I believe.
Yes,
thank you. Chile or Brazil?
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking it's Chile. Well, could you just make a comment on the other while I find his name? Because it was quite an interesting presentation.
Well, let me also mention that if you go to the petition and then click on the media link that takes mm-hmm. you to the articles, a lot of those are by Billy Cox. And if you mm-hmm. click on any one of those, it'll take you to his blog site, and you can read all of the articles. He's written hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
He's the most prolific mainstream reporter dealing with this issue in the world. And he's been writing articles the last 8-9 years, hundreds of them, and I have them all of them archived on the Paradigm Research Group site. There's a special section just for Billy Cox. But of course, so many of the articles written about the nukes conference, UFO nukes press conference, were by Billy, but there's over 100 there. So, yeah, I recommend anybody following his blog. He always has a bit of a humorous take. That's not the word. He has an ironic take on this because it's a very ironic subject. And he always has an interesting approach, but he's always straight. And he goes and talks about the stuff that we're talking about and brings up things that you would never see in a regular article in print because he's working from a blog site there. But he's a full-time reporter for the Sarasota Herald-Tribune. So Billy's been a huge asset to this issue, and one day he will be greatly rewarded, I'm sure. As far as the general from Chile, look... there's a lot happening in South America.
And, you know, I have his name, and boy, you have an excellent memory, Steve. It's retired Chilean Air Force General Ricardo Bermudez. Great presentations both in English and Spanish there at the conference. Thanks for your great memory, Steve.
Well, let me put it this way. My short-term memory is not good at all, but midterm is not so bad. Look, there's a tremendous amount happening out of South America. Chile... Uruguay has released all two, well, not all, but it's released quite a few UFO files. Brazil, all kinds of activity going on there. Also Argentina. And then Mexico, of course. Mexico generated huge awareness on this issue because of the huge flap that took place in there from 91 to 2001. It's still, in a way, going on, but perhaps not as intense. So South America, Central America are well in play on this issue. And the governments are not particularly resistive of dealing with UFO groups and witnesses coming forward. Some more coming out of South America. South America, which is kind of that of the various continents, is the major continents is always been at the back of the bus by and large. The world affairs always seem to be determined by North America or Europe or Asia. And then there's always a tremendous amount of focus on the problems of Africa. South America always seems in the background, but they don't like that. And I think they want to be much more in the foreground. And Brazil recently, I think, took over as the fifth largest economic power in the world, took over or passed France. I think it's fifth or sixth. But so the idea that South America could be a source for disclosures, not out of the question at all. Several nations down there might make the move, and that might be enough to trigger the dominoes fall and thus bring about disclosure worldwide. So we obviously are paying close attention to South America. There's a conference coming up from Brazil in June. I will be speaking there. I know there's some thought about doing a conference near Quito in Ecuador. These are these are conferences that are dealing with you, but also exopolitics as well. And there's more of that going on. So but we keep a close eye on South America.
That's excellent. And, you know, I was thinking of that press conference that occurred in 2000. I think that was 2008 in Washington, D.C. as well, that was co-sponsored by Leslie Kane and James Fox. And
2007, September 12th.
2007, thank you. That was really very memorable. There were two representatives there from South American military, also mm-hmm. from Iran, General Parviz Shafari, I hope I have the name correct,
correct.
And also the Brazilian, I'm sorry, not the Brazilian, the Belgian general. So that was quite an interesting presentation as well. That was given to the general public as well as the media. So it'll be interesting to see developments that might occur with this. Now, Steve, as we are, let me see, we've got about 5 minutes, and I want you to just give us some updates on the field. I know you're going to be speaking at several events in the next few weeks. And first of all, in the San Francisco area, the New Living Expo.
If you listen to paradigmresearchgroup.org and work your way into the PRG main site, the main PRG site, mm-hmm. there's stuff there about my Northern California tour. I'll be speaking part of a panel at the Sonoma Film Festival in Sonoma, California on the 14th. It's a five-day festival. They're showing the day before disclosure. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a panel discussion and what have you. I'll be part of that, along with Bryce Zabel, by the way, author, along with Richard Dolan of AD After Disclosure. And then I will be speaking in Richmond, California, at the Craneway Center, the offices of the United Earth Networks. This is their offices there in that huge Craneway Center. I'll be speaking. There's a link to that. That's on the 18th. On the 20th, I'll be speaking in Ashland, Oregon, at an event there. I have a link to that. And then on the 22nd, I'll be speaking in Novato at another group is sponsoring me speaking in Novato on the 22nd. Again, I have a link to that. And then on the San Francisco Convention Center, I'll be presenting and also on a panel addressing these issues. So I'm going to have a pretty busy stretch there in Northern California and then up in Ashland, Oregon on these issues. And anybody that's up there, hope you can join us for one or more of those.
Wonderful. Boy, I wish I could attend one of those events. They sound great, very informative. Now, you know, Steve, with this disclosure petition 3, do you think it will garner really the media attention it deserves? The individuals who testified at that conference had such high credentials. Their message is so important. What do you think?
What's happened is that the press did a lot of coverage of the We the People when it got going, and then they pretty much dropped it. They're not really writing much about it. I don't anticipate any significant coverage, but you never know. It's there, and someone could jump in at any time. There's a lot of media out there. Now, in addition to that petition being up, I mean, I've sent out multiple press releases. There's an article up on the Examiner, which, again, you can see. I have the links up on that, frankly, and I will. But you can go to the Examiner and see it. And there's other promotions that are. Oh, and then of course Facebook. I mean, the links to it are being generated there. But we're roughly contained right now. We need a breakout. I talk with the Daily Show people a couple times. I talk with the Colbert people a couple times. If they were to get me on, I could talk about these petitions. It could dramatically increase interest and thus trigger the media. So the trick is it's like fishing. You can't catch a fish unless you've got the hook in the water. Not that I fish, because I don't like, you know, torturing animals. But the point is you got to have a hook in the water. And so things like these petitions are simply out there. And, you know, you never know when a major media entity is going to bite. So you keep it out there, and then when that happens, you work with it. And that's kind of the way we operate in this advocacy movement. We try to always keep things in play wait for, you know, a response and then work with that response.
Well, it's a very wise strategy. And, Steve, as well, I wish people, UFO and ET research field would show continued support for these petitions. I'd like to see more of the banners and links up at their sites as well.
Well, yeah, we have pushed them pretty hard over the last 5 months. People are kind of burned out. One other thing I should mention, and I have a link up. Well, I've got some links up. I'll add some more. What PRG has done now is the basic disclosure petition. It's a little modified. because the setting is different. But the basic disclosure petition, which was submitted to the White House on the 22nd of September last year, is now up at change.org. Change.org is one of these activist websites that people can put issues up in petition form. There are a number of these. Change.org is the one that PRG chose. It's a good one. I like it. And so that petition is up there, and it's not connected to the White House. It's not you know, official in that sense, but it is the disclosure petition, and it will be up for a year. So we're giving people a chance to go and sign the petition, disclosure petition at change.org. And if it accumulates enough signatures over time, that might be useful with the media. But at least it has a home, right? So the initial petition has a home where people can go sign. And we certainly encourage them to do so. At change.org, I'm pretty sure anybody in the world can sign. There's no limit, just like there's no limit at PR, at We the People. But people outside the country, though, generally, they're not, you know, interested that much in something happening within the United States. But nevertheless, this is a global issue. I think anybody recognizes that. So change.org is where the disclosure petition is. Whether or not I'll put these other ones that are out there, put them up, change.org, I'm not sure. But certainly the fundamental petition, which calls for the world's governments to finally acknowledge that we're not alone in the universe, this major thing that must happen, that's sitting up at change.org, and people can sign it at their convenience.
Absolutely, that's a very exciting development. And again, Steve, I just want to thank you very much for your efforts in this field. You really have been a very strong advocate for many, and it's much appreciated. And I hope you'll be a soon return guest.
Of course, Patrice.
Because it's always an honor, and always the discussion is very informative and, to me, very motivational. Now, on the next show in the network, will be Changing America. It's going to be a very interim, Steve. It will be with Joe Montaldo and Jason Wilson, and the website is www.changingamerica.us. And also, I'd like to mention to our audience the other great programs on the network, such as UFO Undercover Wednesday evenings with host Joe Montaldo, and Thursday evenings, a great new show. It's Second Sight New York City, very popular, very dynamic, with hosts Chris George and Stephanie Benetti. Don't miss it. And Steve, God bless you. Again, my show should be secular, but that's spoken from the heart.
I need all the blessings I can get, Patrice.
And your URL is paradigmresearchgroup.org. And once you're there, you'll see all the other important links as well. Thank you again, Steve, and thanks, everyone, for joining us this evening. Your time is appreciated. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us this evening for the interview with Steve Bassett, Executive Director of the Paradigm Research Group. Your time with us is appreciated, and we wish you all a great weekend.
Open your mind to the high streams of UFOs, paranormal, cults, metaphysics, and politics. We always march into the apocalypse every Saturday at 11 p.m. Eastern. The Church of Vegas.com, Paranormal Radio Network.org.